It's 8 o'clock, and it is Thursday, February 5th, for the record. Present today is, as you can see, Representative Gardner, Representative Munoz, and myself, and Representative Keller is excused today. I'd ask anybody in the audience, if they have their cell phone with them, please turn it off at this time. And today we're going to have two overviews, one from the Office of Economic Development and one from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. But first, let's ask Mr. Osterman to introduce himself. And Joe is worked for Commissioner Noddy since February 2007, lifelong Alaskan, and he has the responsibility of promoting economic development in our state. Good morning, sir.
Thank you, Co-Chair Huron. My name is Joe Osterman with the Office of Economic Development. I want to thank you for this opportunity to share with you some of the work that we're doing on behalf of Alaskans through the Office of Economic Development. I have a slideshow presentation. You have copies on your desk. However, I certainly invite a less formal overview of the Office of Economic Development. So if you have any questions as we move through the slideshow, please feel free to interrupt, and we can address your concerns then. What I would like to do by the end of this presentation is for the committee, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, to have a better understanding of the work that the Office of Economic Development is doing on behalf of Alaskans. On behalf of the legislative body and especially your constituency that we work with and work for out there in Alaska. I took over the Office of Economic Development exactly a year ago this month, and our mission formally is to promote and advocate for specifically the industries of film, minerals, tourism, commercial fisheries, forestry, small business development, and minerals. Now, the tool set that OED has, it seems to be a very, very focused advocacy for industry. And internally within our office, what we have done is we have broadened that theme in that, yes, we are advocates for industry, but we are advocates for industry to the benefit of Alaskans. And that is a key focus of ours. We have a unique positioning within the state government in that, unlike a lot of other divisions and departments within the state who are very government-centric, I like to think of the Office of Economic Development. We have one foot in the private sector and we have one foot in state offices. And we actually serve as a conduit between industry and government offices. And our main focus, again, is advocacy for the benefit of Alaskans.
So, Joe, just for interruption here, of course, in your first slide, you say since 2004 this department's been here. Could you just briefly say, what did you do before this office was created in 2004?
That's a good question. I wasn't here. There was an entire division. An entire department of economic development. And several years ago, Community and Regional Affairs and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development were merged together. Essentially, this is really the Office of Economic Development is what's left. I think within the Department of Commerce, we literally have one of the state's biggest missions. And as you'll see in our organization chart on the next slide, we have one of the smallest divisions.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We the Office of Economic Development, as I said, has a very focused tool set. Economic development covers an extremely broad spectrum, and we have industry specialists that focus on developing specific aspects of Alaska's economy. However, having the title of economic development, we get requests from a broad variety from the public sector, legislative requests, administrative requests. We are very actively involved in the analysis of Alaska's economy and developing it. But primarily, one of the things that I would like to focus on today is that we serve as a resource for you and your constituency with regard to the specific areas of expertise that we have to offer. And you can look at, by looking at our org chart, again, we have a very, very big mission. And I believe right now the total staff within the Office of Economic Development is 17. But you can see that we offer expertise in tourism, forestry, minerals, fisheries, small business development, and the newest, our newest addition within the Office of Economic Development is in film. Many of you are aware of the initiative that went through last year to restart the film office, and I'll explain more about that shortly. One of the products that OED produces is information. Where we have this industry expertise, and we do have industry experts that appreciate the value and the perspective of industry, both from an industry perspective as well as from an Alaska-centric perspective, it affords us the opportunity to produce some of the reports. We handed out the Alaska Economic Performance Report that's before you right now. It's basically offers a snapshot of the health and well-being of our industries within Alaska, including oil and gas. Now, we don't really have an emphasis on developing oil and gas within the Office of Economic Development. We actually focus on almost every single industry within the state other than oil and gas. However, DNR has become aware of our business model. They have kind of an awkward situation where they're the permitting, the licensing agency, and the advocacy agency. And we've recently had meetings with DNR about looking at the OED model in developing their advocacy role for oil and gas. They're in an awkward situation right now. They don't know if it would be a good fit to add another industry expert within the Office of Economic Development or emulate OED's model within DNR. The other component of the Alaska Economic Performance Report is the net rate of return. We like to do an analysis on the impact that industry has, specifically on a general fund perspective, and that's highlighted in that Alaska Economic Performance Report. We produce it once a year, as well as some other reports that you see there. We produce the Alaska Minerals Industry Report and the Minerals Commission Report. We have an emphasis on forestry products. The new film initiative requires us to produce a performance report on film activity in the state. We'll have that report ready in about 2 weeks. But also, we've become basically a focal point for information gathering. And it's a role that Commerce really hasn't played a lot in historically. And it's a great fit for OED, where we have this industry expertise. So one of the things that was added last year was an economic analysis component. With us today is our head economist, Casey Campbell. We have an economist on staff with OED.
Which person?
This is Casey Campbell
okay.
Right here.
Thank you.
In trying to put together these reports as well as address legislative inquiries, public inquiries, one of the things that has become very, very apparent to us within the Office of Economic Development is Alaska is really lacking information. And, we think we have a lot of information. We don't. But one of the fundamental reasons for that, if you can imagine, is Alaska really doesn't have the administrative mechanisms that most states have in gathering timely information. We don't have income taxes. We don't have sales taxes. And these are mechanisms that other states use to get a very, very reliable snapshot of their state's economy. So the Office of Economic Development works very, very hard with other agencies, other organizations, other groups in gathering data. We have lots and lots of pockets of data out there, but we really don't have a central warehouse of information It's one of the initiatives that OED is working on right now, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But we are working to broaden our economic expertise and our analysis capabilities, largely for the benefit of the legislature. As you consider policy and initiatives, we would like to be able to analyze some of those on your behalf, what impact they have to the state, what impact they have to the economy, what impact they have at a community level. And we have that expertise, and now we have that economic analysis to back it up.
Okay. Thank you. We've been joined by Representative Millett.
Morning, Representative.
Good morning.
A recent example, though, of some of the work that we can do on behalf of you is there was recently all the economic indicators, both through us and ATIA and others, it looks like we're going to have a severe drop in tourism this summer. And we were looking at marketing money, possibly for in-state. And so we were able to, rather than go out to the usual private sector and go through the long process of getting a formal report, we were able to put together a pretty good analysis of how this money might impact Alaska. And we prepared that analysis in about a week. And we passed that on to the legislatures that were considering this.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I think it was last year the legislature sort of changed the funding formula for ATIA.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
We're matching them. Can you talk a little bit about how that works now and what ATIA, because I know their fundraising situation changed and the cruise ship industry kind of pulled out of their contributions. And
right.
Can you talk a little bit about how their fundraising was, I guess, last year, this year, and anticipated for next year, and how that's going?
Well, I certainly can't speak on behalf of Ron Peck. We administer that contract through the Office of Economic Development. We also have a large tourism component within the Office of Economic Development. But in administering that contract, what changed last year is they did have a large contributor of their matching component, the cruise industry, pulled out as a result of the cruise head tax. And so right now they have basically lobbied for and petitioned for a change in the match. Uh-huh. It is they need to produce 30% of their overall budget, and the state matches 70% for every dollar that they.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a 70-30 match right now. Okay. That they're working on. And I, as far as proposals for any sort of change in that, again, it's an independent contract, and we administer it. They basically, you know, in many ways lobby on behalf of themselves and their program.
Can you tell me how much they raised last year, how much we anticipate or they anticipate they'll raise this year, and do we know what projections are for next year? And then we know what we're matching too, right?
Can I refer to one of my staff?
Sure.
Carol McConkie is our head of tourism within the Office of Economic uh-huh. Development, and she manages that.
Uh huh.
Could you come up and introduce yourself? Yes.
Thank you.
Please come up and then state your name and title for the record, please.
There we go. Hey, thank you very much.
We also have been joined by Representative Cisna. Good morning. Yes, go ahead.
Good morning, Representative. My name is Carol McConkie. I'm the Tourism Development Manager for the Office of Economic Development, and I do manage along with Joe, the tourism marketing contract with the Alaska Travel Industry Association. In answer to your question, last year the match was ATIA raised. They would have raised $5 million, or at least close to that. We anticipated early on in the legislative session that there might be a difficulty in meeting that match, and so the official end of the year match was $4.2 million to match the state's appropriation because there was a decrement last year in the supplemental. So the original appropriation was $5 million. And then it was reduced by $800,000 in the supplemental. So the total match that ATI raised in FY08 was $4.2 million. And I'm sorry. And then for this year, we anticipate that each month when they submit an invoice, we have a cash flow report that they show month by month their receipts, the revenue that they've generated, and then also the forecast for the remainder of the year. Right now, they are in target to raise $2.7 million. The state's appropriation was $9 million, and so ATIA, in order to access that $9 million, needs to raise 30% of the state's appropriation, and that's $2.7 million. And they tell me that they are on target to meet that match. For next year, we anticipate providing, it really depends on this year's appropriation. The legislation that passed last year that changed the match, I believe, had a three-year period before it sunsets. And so if all things stay the same, if the appropriation stays the same, we anticipate that ATIA will, again, expect to raise $2.7 million in 2010.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.
Yes, before you leave, Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I do apologize for being late, because this is, and I'm sorry I missed it out on the beginning of this, because I was here when we essentially privatized, right? And one of the real concerns with that for me was that it looked like other states had more in their in the contract that they made, and that there was more oversight, and the promises were that the private industry was essentially going to take over a huge percentage of this, and it was going to be a real boon to the state to go this direction. And not that there hasn't been a huge amount of work, and I know that there's that it looked yes, last year when I was looking at this, it looked as if there'd been more diversification, wider array. And my whole concern about this was the independent traveler, and making sure the independent traveler was a large part of what we were seeking, because there isn't any other way to get the independent traveler here. So, and you've already gone over a lot, and I know you have, but do we compare our states, use other states as benchmarks, and try to figure out how we're doing in terms of the assets we're getting from this arrangement, and are we making assessments in terms of how we could help the industry, but also to do good oversight? Can you answer that?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, you're correct. I think that, and I actually came on in 2001, so that was just after the change in the funding. But I am well aware of the situation, having worked in another state, and every state studies each other's funding sources. So the intent was to increase, because Alaska comparatively was, at that time about 10 years ago, quite a bit behind in spending in relation to other states. I think it's a really common thing for states to look and say, this state has a bigger budget, therefore we need to match that and in order to be competitive. I think every state does that. With respect to the independent traveler and whether or not we're doing enough, I think the system right now as it stands, and the legislation that created our current marketing model, directs our marketing organization to do a broad marketing program, an image campaign that creates awareness of Alaska as a desirable destination. It's a broad net that just casts out and pulls everyone in. And so in terms of doing marketing specifically to the independent traveler, I think in terms of whether or not we're reaching that market, it really has to do a lot with the strategy, where you're putting your dollars in terms of, and this is nothing new to any of you, but in terms of the audience that you're targeting. Right now, the system that we have really is a broad net and pulls everyone in. We tried for a couple of years through independent traveler grants to be able to target that independent market. And we did, the state's marketing program did some targeted messages, TV ads, and newspaper placements, and direct mail campaign that was geared toward the independent traveler. And that was in fiscal year 2007 and 2008. We did not see a move in that market, and as a result of those campaigns. However, it's difficult to measure the full effectiveness of a campaign in those, you know, that immediate and even maybe two years out. And we've also, you know, had high gas prices and a number in the economy, and there are a lot of different reasons. I think that said, though, I think that we still have to figure that no matter what a year brings, that there's always going to be something that is going to provide us some challenges. So to kind of wrap up your question, which is probably a longer one, in terms of an analysis of how we could do it better, our director Osterman and I have been talking a little bit about that in terms of how we might have discussions with the Alaska Travel Industry Association. We certainly have them internally within our office, but at this point, the directive to the Alaska Travel Industry Association is to do a broad marketing image campaign, and does not. There is room for doing various focused campaigns, but that's not the primary mission at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Representative Munoz.
Hey, Carol, how are you? I'm curious about the independent traveler, the yacht sector of the economy, which is a really high dollar contributor to the economy. And we're not, I don't think, taking advantage of the full opportunity to, you know, showcase our coastal communities to vessel owners. And of course, in this economy, maybe that's not practical, but I'm wondering if you have a strategy with ATIA to target that sector of the economy.
Representative Munoz, through the chair. We've actually, not necessarily through with ATIA, but through our programs within the Office of Economic Development, we have a Developing Alaska Rural Tourism Program, and with the communities of Petersburg, Wrangell, and Kaufman Cove, our staff member Odin Brody has worked with them quite extensively. And I know that was one of the sectors, the segments, the markets that they felt had some real potential. And so while we don't work specifically with ATIA on that particular issue, we do work on it through a product development through our development programs. Mm-hmm. Typically when ATIA becomes involved is when it is a market. The problem is that there are a lot of different markets and specific products within the different regions of the state, and the marketing budget and the way that they're able to target those segments is primarily through public relations and press releases and media that goes out to the reporters and journalists. But to be able to reach each specific segment, whether it be Northern Lights viewing or whether it be the yacht market, would at this point diminish the ability to send out that broad message. Mm-hmm. And so it's would be nearly impossible to target each specific product in the different regions. Mm-hmm. Now, that is typically the state's role is to bring everybody in, and it's the regional role to be able to develop those products and then to be able to bring people to those areas. And that within the Office of Economic Development is really where we have our focus. Mm-hmm. And working with a number of rural communities, we have a federal grant, and it's a state-federal partnership. We just began our program again for fiscal year 2009 and 2010, and so that's something that we continue to work on with the communities.
Okay, thank you. Just one brief question: the industry match requirement is you said it was 2.7 for this year, and then most likely next year. Is that historically, is that high, low, same?
Well, historically for Alaska, I know that back in the 90s or early 90s that, and I don't have the figures with me, but compared to where it was in the early, around 2000, it's much higher than what the state was putting in. And I'm just off the top of my head thinking around 6 million around 2000. The earlier 90s, I know, and particularly I know that there was a infusion of marketing funding around the time of the oil spill. There was an additional infusion of marketing funding, so that was probably the high period. In relation to other states, it's all over the place. I mean, in terms, I would say we're on the lower scale in comparison to states like even Colorado now. Certainly Hawaii is kind of the destination that we identify as a competitor, because Hawaii and Alaska are very often competing with international destinations. We're more of an exotic destination. I do know that this year all states are, all the funding is on the line, and most states are really fighting to keep their budgets for next year.
Representative Millett.
Thank you for being here. I just have a question. You talked about the funding back in 2000, and that's when the cruise ship was participating with ATIA. And now the cruise ships, I assume, are doing their own marketing campaign for Alaska and Alaska Cruise Destination. Is that true?
Representative Millett, and through the chair. Yes, and in fact, they've always done their own marketing, and at a considerable amount. I don't know what the figures are this year, but I know in the past we've heard numbers of, you know, 70 million or more collectively through the cruise passenger or cruise marketing. So they're not dependent on our marketing. They've got quite a substantial budget, and they will ensure that they fill their seats, I believe.
Yes, go ahead.
And so the cruise ship, when they do their destination marketing, does ATA work with the cruise ship destination marketing to complement, so we're not overlapping in the markets that they're doing? Do we coordinate with the cruise ship on their marketing campaigns, so the duplication is not there, so we're marketing at some other destination? Say they have a big Midwest campaign, ATA is not going to the Midwest and duplicating their work. Do you guys coordinate the marketing campaigns?
Through the chair, Representative Millett. I can't speak to the direct coordination of the campaigns. Typically, I don't believe there is a coordination. Their campaigns are very distinct and separate, and even separate from each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a lot. They have cruise associations that they're all members of: the Northwest Cruise Ship Association, the Alaska Cruise Association. But in terms of coordination, the primary coordination has been that there are usually two or three members of the board from the cruise industry that sit on the board of directors, and they also participate on the marketing committee and assist with, and also, you know, assist in making marketing decisions. However, ATIA does not market directly to the cruise industry. I mean, there is no specific strategy to say we're going to go out and market to the cruise market. That's part of the broad brush campaign. And so I would say it's inevitable that we are reaching the same visitors, because and I know that we are, because ATIA, when it goes out and it and generates leads, they are able to sell leads to the membership. And now, while the cruise industry is not contributing as a major marketing partner as they were before, they are still members of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and they still purchase leads. And so if ATIA is going to be putting an advertisement in a magazine, for example, you will most likely see advertising from the cruise industry, a placement, and some of our communities do the same. They purchase leads, and they will also reinforce that message, the state message, by having their advertising in the same publication.
Okay. I was going to save this question for later, and of course, our next presenter with ASME is, you know, is basically going to have the same message. It's how do we deliver Alaska to the rest of the world? But last night I had an opportunity to ask Governor Palin a very specific question, the responsibility of being a celebrity. So I guess throughout both presentations, you know, at least share the flavor of how can we take advantage of her celebrity status to promote Alaska, come on up to Alaska type thing. So, you know, I'm not asking you to respond to that, but I mean, think that, you know, geez, what an opportunity for your department, for ASME, and so please just sort of, you know, weave that in there.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. Seems to be a committee interested in tourism. I think our next slide.
Yeah, Joe, you got about a half an hour left.
So. Okay, all right. Well, we have covered tourism quite well. One of the things that we talked a lot about ATIA, one of the our role specifically in the Office of Economic Development of Tourism is to really complement ATIA. We don't manage any sort of marketing budget. We actually manage programs that are designed to address the scenario that you just described. One of our more popular programs is the DART program. It's Developing Alaska Rural Tourism. Our tourism initiatives do have somewhat of a rural emphasis, but through literally three people within our tourism staff, we manage the DART program, the TMAP program, which is very popular. It's a tourism mentorship program where we actually bring together people that are considering a business model, and we match them up with a volunteer that has already rolled that business model out. And it's been very, very successful. We actually are people that are shaking hands with Alaskans that are out there interested in getting involved in this business. We are boots on the ground, trying to help people capture some of those tourism dollars that might be coming into their community. And so it's very relevant to the scenario that you just described. Again, there's a million different scenarios out there. With a staff of three, it's difficult for us to program in all of them. But the DART program has been very, very popular and successful. It is, EDA is not very routine at adding subsequent funding for programs. And this is one that EDA has backed for a couple of years now, or a couple program cycles, because they definitely see the value that we are building out there in creating new business opportunities that create new jobs. And again, our emphasis is rural. Probably one of the more well-known results of the DART program is the Shivak birdwatching. He was somebody that went through the DART program and built the confidence. And you know what? This might work out here. And it's been a pretty popular tourism model. And it's bringing new dollars to those communities. Tourism is the low-lying fruit to diversify Alaska's economy. We are just now scratching the surface of what tourism can do to stabilize Alaska's economy. And it's never been more apparent than now when we go through the cycle of our fiscal attachment to the oil and gas industry. We go from 140 down to 40. It, you know, and that is what OED does, not just in tourism, but through across a lot of different industries. But tourism is definitely one of those areas where we see a lot of potential.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it almost sounds, is it the DART program that has almost a mentoring kind of quality to it? Is that what you're describing?
Representative Sisna through the chair. The DART program, we have two programs. There's a tourism mentorship program.
Oh, okay.
Separate. The DART program, we offer workshops in developing business plans and basically workshops that help people flesh out their business model. And, you know, we offer through that program B&B seminars. You know, people that are interested in developing a certain aspect of a tourism business model to capture those tour dollars locally. And so we have one of the OED, Drew was, there he is. It, Drew and Odin actually lead the DART and the TMAP programs. And so it's not really a fixed program, but it's like, you know, if we thought that there was a huge amount of interest in, you know, hey, how do we capture these cruise ship dollars, or excuse me, the yacht dollars? They might look into developing a specific workshop that might address just that. But again, with a staff of three, it's very, very difficult to cover all of the different scenarios. So one of the things that we do is we produce publications like Operating a B&B in Alaska, and that's available on the web, or, you know, we can send it out to you on request. We have it available in tourist booths, and we try to get it out as much as we possibly can. The other production that we just finished last year, and it has a cameo appearance by the governor, is doing business with the cruise ship industry. You know, town gets flooded with cruise ship visitors. How do you capture those dollars? There's a lot of dollars walking around the town. How do you capture them? So our business models are a little bit similar with ATIA, but different in that we're trying to figure out how to get as much of those tourist dollars to stay in Alaska as possible. That's what we do.
Representative Gardner.
Isn't ATIA working specifically or largely to get independent travelers? I mean, isn't that to the benefit of local Alaskan-owned businesses? Mm-hmm. The people that will, I mean, the cruise ship industry may have offshoots where people will stay here and go to a bed and breakfast and rent a car and do all of that, but lots of them don't. So ATIA, I think, is more focused on trying to get the independents.
Yeah. Representative Gardner, through the chair, I believe you're right. Our studies, certainly through with the help of our economist and evaluating, we also, one of the reports we produce is the Alaska Tourism Statistics report. That comes through the Office of Economic Development. And certainly, that independent traveler drops more money in the state of Alaska than just about any other travel. People that fly in and they've got to rent a car, they've got to stay in a hotel someplace. They pay for a sightseeing visit through one of our smaller, more cottage industry. And there is no doubt that, you know, they go out to Bristol Bay and, you know, spend a lot of money to fly fish for it. They are definitely, they drop more money in the state than anybody, and I do believe that that is their focus.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, that gives you a little bit of a flavor of our tourism programs within the office. It is, we really do focus on a rural setting. Drew was in Nome last week for a stakeholder meeting, bringing out a workshop, a DART workshop to that region. 5 years ago, not a lot of interest. With the stories of Emonac and a lot of these communities that really need new money coming into their communities to address some of the economic situations that they're having to address right now. The latest workshop that Drew put together and the stakeholder meeting they put together was very well attended. And he sent me a note here that there were people that went to Nome interested in this tourism workshop from Savunga, Gamble, Wales, Teller, Council, Sheshmerov, Brevik Mission, etc. So there's definitely an interest in growing tourism. And again, I think it's probably one of the most underdeveloped aspects of our economy. So moving on, we have an interest in developing forestry. We have one industry expert dedicated to that. For those of you who've been around here for a long time, Jack Phelps is our industry expert. He has been a longtime champion of forestry products coming out of the Tongass. He spent over 20 years on that. That is obviously, as we all know, for those of you from the Southeast, has been a difficult situation for a number of years now. But it's interesting how his expertise has rolled over into fields of energy. Developing some of our birch hardwood potential, which there's a huge potential for Alaskan birch. He has just recently, after about a year and a half of working with a very large value-added hardwoods manufacturer in the lower 48 who is running into problems with their their product line was primarily focused on red alder, and they're running out of, they don't have any red alder, and so they've, Jack has been introducing birch as a complementary product in veneers and stuff like that. And just recently, they have committed to investing a sizable amount of money up in Petersville in the valley to develop a hardwoods plant up there, primarily to provide feedstock to their operation down in the lower 48. Chair, I think that was
you. Oh, yes. Go ahead. Thank you.
I'm not sure I understood exactly what they're doing. Is this where they are just taking the resource in raw form to the lower 48, so none of the processing is happening here? We're not getting any value added.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that was their initial intent. Uh-huh. Since then, they have, Jack has married up this outside company with a mill in the valley that does have value-added capabilities. And so they're looking at the prospects of coming up with a more efficient business model where maybe we could get that value-added component in our economy as well. So certainly we would like to be making the cabinets and the furniture and the whole works. They've got that all set up down there. You know, but we are trying. Jack is doing a very, very good job of convincing these people of the value of having as much of their operation in Alaska as possible. And so there is a possibility of wood floor plank and veneer coming out of this arrangement from Alaska. So thank you very much for your question.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Munoz.
One of the areas here is funding sources. Do you work with small businesses to get capital?
Thank you very much for that question. Yes, the Office of Economic Development works very close with agencies such as ADA, mm-hmm. And that leads right into a project that Jack is involved in analyzing right now. Seward is a town that is having some, they're kind of at the end of the grid with regard to the rail belt energy. Mm-hmm. They're often a bit warned about blackouts and stuff. Jack is evaluating their pellet proposal. As far as how much of forestry would require to augment their reliance on Chugach Electric and MLMP for power, and is it possible to have that power augmented through pellet? But one of the agencies that may be involved in a partnership with that is ADA. One of the other agencies that we're very, very close with in the division of or in the Department of Commerce is the Division of Investments. NAME doesn't really sell a lot of the services that they offer, but they do provide low-income loans for small business development, especially with a rural emphasis. Mm-hmm. And we steer a lot of our tourism business people that are interested and that need capital in launching their business. We partner them up with the Division of Investments as well as commercial fishery people as well.
Mm-hmm. I recently met with an owner of an operation in Ketchikan, and he's developing a product, a wood chip product, to use as an alternative heating source. But are you familiar with that project?
Representative Munoz, through the chair, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we've certainly made our resources available to him for further analysis. Mm-hmm. With everybody that's trying to, enter into a business venture. We offer the economic analysis to the public through our industry experts as well as through our economist, as well as we steer them towards resources that may be available in helping them launch their business.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just follow up,
his
thought was on, well, with the energy, the AEA energy funding, that the criteria narrows it to just government and government-supported enterprises, leaving out businesses in that consideration. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that, and does the department have a position to try to expand that eligibility criteria to promote entrepreneurs that are really, you know, making significant impacts on energy?
Yeah, Representative Munoz, through the chair, that great question. I think that's a better question for AEA, Steve Hagenson. Certainly, the Office of Economic Development sees opportunity for private involvement in addressing some of the energy issues throughout the state. As far as the actual criteria or program guidelines with regard to that renewable energy fund that was considered last night, don't know what the actual result was. But that would be a great question for AEA. I could certainly get that answer for you if you'd like me to.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate that with Representative Munoz shaking the tree. Hopefully you will take that back to the commissioner, is that, I mean, she has a really good point there.
Chairman, I think that that's a very, very good comment, and the Office of Economic Development certainly believes that the private sector can often be more efficient at solving some of these problems than the public sector. And so when there's good ideas out there that can come up with, that can, you know, address some of the challenges to energy in rural Alaska, you know, we should be aggressive in helping them roll them out.
Long ways to go here, so
better. Okay, moving through. Real quick, minerals development. We have two people that are involved. Again, we are industry advocates, but we are industry advocates to the extent that it's good for Alaskans. Okay, we offer our expertise to industry with regard to, you know, how do we develop a certain deposit in a particular area? We help them through the permitting process, the licensing process, environmental process. We help them understand our tax model. The tax model in the state is very complicated when it comes to minerals. Rich Hughes is the expert on that state's tax model. We're working right now with DNR.
Representative Gardner, that's all right. Go ahead.
Chair, I just want to understand the term. You say working with municipalities relative to tax loading of the industry. What does tax loading mean?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, great question. Actually, right now there's a community out there that's evaluating an extraction tax, and so one of the services we provide, it's their prerogative to you know, administer or impose that tax. And so one of the things that Rich has been doing with them is evaluating the impact that it may have on industry and their decisions, as well as realistically what it will take to administer that tax and what it will really bring to the community. And so we offer that area of expertise.
And follow, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So who owns the land that a municipality can tax? I mean, the state has severance taxes, tribals, or owners can do that. So in this case, it has to be land that's owned by the municipality?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, actually boroughs have severance tax authority. They can add a tax on top of the state tax. So
if they own the land, or regardless of who owns the land, if it's in the borough?
It's in the borough.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Go ahead.
And so, you know, definitely one of the things that we do with minerals is a lot of outreach. Develop a composite of the minerals opportunities that are available in Alaska, and so one of the things that Rich does is he gets out with the minerals industry, expresses that potential for investment, and tries to encourage Alaska as a favorable place to invest. But again, we draw a fine line between industry advocacy and making sure that it's very, very good for Alaskans. We press very hard on local hire. We don't have laws that allow us to do that exclusively, but we do position ourselves. I mean, our customer is Alaskans. We work on behalf of Alaskans, and we take that very serious.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Gardner.
We don't have laws that allow us to do that, and I think we can't, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, there's...
Representative Gardner, through the chair, we can... Through our economic analysis and our struggles really to get a really good strong picture of Alaska's economy through some of these industries, we can't force an industry to hire only Alaskans. We can only encourage them. Maybe we can get around that, as well as address our lack of information. It's a scary thought here, but maybe a small tax again, an income tax. That if you qualify for the permanent fund dividend, Alaskans get it back, and those that aren't Alaskans don't. Don't know if that would work or not, but we think about this a lot. We're essentially a reverse tax state. We pay people to live here, and certainly from our perspective in gathering information, we should be using that permanent fund dividend application as a tool to gather better information about our economy. So,
go ahead, please.
Okay. Fisheries development. We've got In the room here is Kevin O'Sullivan, probably one of the single most busy guys in state government. He is the open sign for the fishing industry. We do work a lot with the people that will be presenting next, ASME. But again, very, very big area of concern, lots of different issues. Anybody who's ever been involved in the fishing industry knows that this is a huge area of economic development. Also a very, very big area for economic promise still within Alaska. One of the things that's very apparent to us is that we have this extremely large industry. And, you know, there's a lot of the benefit, really goes outside. And so certainly from our perspective, one of the things that we try to do is, how can we help with policy and help local fishing communities try to keep more of those dollars at home? One of the things that Kevin's been working on is RSDA development, Regional Seafood Development Associations. And we're trying to bring these regional groups together. And it's a self-imposed tax arrangement where we're actually convincing these people that it's good to tax themselves. The program allows the state to reappropriate that tax back to the region so that they can use it as they see fit. Copper River Seafoods is a good example, not necessarily the business Copper River Seafoods, but that region, where they've done a really good job of really promoting their regional advantages of seafood. Bristol Bay is also another RSDA that, coming together, trying to bring a lot of fishermen together is not an easy task. Kevin's got definitely his plate full. Cook Inlet is interested in establishing an RSDA. But depending on the region, they take that money and they use it in ways that they see to advance the development of their regional seafood concerns. Bristol Bay, they're looking at more icing and cooling capability with their self-assessed tax. Cook Inlet is just looking at coming together as an RSDA. Aleutia is a new RSDA that was formed just this last year. They've started a self-assessed tax arrangement that goes to the state. It goes back to them in the form of appropriation. We don't take any admin fees. It all goes back out to them. So it brings them together more in a regional scope. To try to add value to that to their seafood industry.
Well, it's obvious that we didn't program enough time for your department, so we got a few minutes left.
Okay.
A quick question from Representative Sisna, and then if Representative Millett has a question before she has to go, we'll allow that too.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm just very interested. It used to be that fisheries was, I think, the second highest employer somewhere in there. Do you have, and actually you may somewhere, and you could point it to us, where you have how all these different industries are ranking in terms of numbers of employees, because it's a good idea, I think, for us to know where our workforce is spread across the state and what they're working in.
Yeah, we, Representative Sisna, through the chair, we would love to emphatically be able to tell you just exactly how many Alaskans are employed in an industry and how many Alaskans are employed in minerals and tourism development. Without those administrative mechanisms that are afforded other states through taxation and some of the things that we don't like up here, we literally have to rely in many ways on surveys. A lot of these surveys are industry-centric. The minerals industry is a perfect example where I know that Rich Hughes really kind of, he would, industry, it offers up a figure. Our industry expert, they think it might be somewhat close, but it doesn't come into, by using, we have a mechanism through the permanent fund dividend where, you can say that an Alaskan is employed, but that person may have just become Alaskan to take on a specific job within a specific development component of developing a part of the industry. And as soon as their expertise is no longer needed, they're off to South Africa onto the next project within. We would like to emphatically be. We're working on it. We understand it's an issue, and I believe that this legislature would certainly. Be interested to know just exactly how does industry affect
Alaskans.
Representative Millett, any questions, even in any part of the presentation that's left over?
No, Joe, I just want to congratulate you on some of the ecotourism and the bird watching that you've developed out in the Waikiki Delta. I know that Carl Berger and I are friends and have known each other a long time, and he's made great efforts out in the Bethel region. So I just appreciate that you know, you're expanding the commerce out in those areas. It's
thank you for
well
the comment.
Done.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I do have questions. I don't know if other members of the committee have also received these emails, but I received a sort of flurry of emails talking about farmed salmon here in Alaska. And I know that it's very controversial and that the state, through ASME, has put a lot of effort into branding our fish as wild and free. And so even if there are economic arguments for farmed fish, it obviously adversely impacts our wild and free marketing and that fish part of the industry. Do you have any opinion about that? Is there a resurgence of interest, or is this kind of disproportionate to what could really happen?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, the Office of Economic Development has been involved in analyzing the shellfish aquaculture potential for Alaska. There might be some great merit in that. You know, Oceans Alaska down here in the southeast, it very well could be a very viable industry, especially for this area where we've lost timber. And you know, I think we're going to experience a drop in tourism this year, and we all need to diversify our regional economies. As far as the actual argument of fish farming versus wild stocks, I would like to save the response for your next presenter.
Okay.
And he is the expert on that issue.
Thank you.
Now you're called an expert. Okay. Yes, go ahead, Representative Nios.
Thank you very much for your presentation. And I just had one comment. You don't have to respond, but just to think about that a lot of individuals, just in the last few weeks, actually, there have been two situations where I've been asked to intervene and advocate for individuals that are trying to set up businesses that come to our communities from other nations and that have difficulty understanding the kind of the bureaucracy and how to work their way through that. And I'm wondering if you could think about playing a role in helping individuals that come here and want to start businesses that have some maybe communication difficulties or difficulties understanding the way we approach setting up a business. Just a thought.
Representative Munoz, through the chair, one of the areas that I probably won't have time to get into is certainly we have a concern in small business development. We have a website, small business development or small business assistance center, and it certainly could be something that we could look into that could help new people that maybe have some cultural challenges in navigating the system in Alaska, and we would certainly look into and see how we can address that in our website. But we do have a very comprehensive website that offers assistance in helping people establish business in Alaska, and we try to keep that as current as we possibly can.
I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Ray if I could borrow 5 minutes from his time, but I guess in the rest of your presentation, I don't want to shortchange any of this. In fact, we're going to invite you back to so we can, you know, have this kind of dialogue. But if there's any visitors that are relative that are, you know, that aren't here in Juneau, any visitors here in the audience that are relative to your presentation, maybe you should jump to them so we can take care of that, and then we'll invite you back either after Ray's done or at another meeting in the future. So if you could do that for me.
Thank you very much, Representative Huron, Chair. I don't have any other subsequent presentations that are of people that are interested in getting up. They were just here for support for me.
Okay.
I can probably wrap this up in just a few minutes if you'd like.
Well, since we're here, the next one, probably the one that has everybody likes to hear about, is might as well do film development. Then we'll, the courtesy of Ray, we'll go on to his presentation. And if there's any time left over, we'll bring you back up.
Very good. Film, as everybody knows, is a new initiative. We had a film office a number of years back. It was cut. It was primarily an office that was front-loaded with marketing. All right. This office is set up quite a bit different. The industry really seems to respond to incentives. I don't know if this is a scenario that was crafted by the industry, or if it's in, or if it's more crafted by states that are interested in getting involved. But it certainly is a way to bring new dollars to a state. We are just now rolling out the regulations that support this new program. Very, very difficult. Again, from our perspective, as well as working with this on these regulations with the Department of Revenue, we really wanted to make sure that this wasn't Alaska-centric, that this wasn't necessarily good for the industry and then hopefully good for Alaska. We wanted to make sure this was good for Alaska. And in doing so, we really crafted those regulations very, very tight, where if we're going to give out a tax credit, and I think everybody's aware with how this works, what this program does is a production company comes up, and let's say they spend $1 million in what we deem as qualifying expenses in Alaska. The Office of Economic Development will issue no less than a $300,000 tax credit and as much as $440,000. The tax credit incentive ranges from 30% to 44% of their qualifying spend. And so what we did, what we were concentrating on in regulation is that if we're going to give away this tax credit, what can we do to assure that Alaska got at least twice that in new money? And that was the intent of the initiative that was championed by Senator Ellis. And so the regulations is in the public process, or in the public comment process right now. However, the effective date of this initiative was last September. And so we worked pretty hard to make sure that we had a mechanism that for production companies that had a schedule based on this effective date, that they had an opportunity to do so. So we set up a pre-qualifying process. And we actually have four production companies that have pre-qualified. Disney has already come up and done work in Sitka. We have about $5 million of money coming to Alaska that is estimated in these productions. The estimated tax credit that will be issued with regard to those four productions is about 1.5 to 2. Never know until they're done with their productions and the receipts are in. Disney is done, and they're waiting for us to finalize our regulations process that further defines just exactly what's going to qualify for a tax credit or not.
In the absence of an income or a sales tax, what kind of tax credit are you talking about?
Good question. Representative Munoz, through the chair. How this works is we issue a certificate to Disney, basically that has a value of $150,000. They would essentially broker that certificate to Carlisle Trucking, Alyeska Pipeline, a number of people that do have a corporate tax obligation. We do have corporate income taxes in the state of Alaska. We bring in about $700 million a year in corporate taxes. So they would take that $100,000 certificate that's issued by the Office of Economic Development and sell it for $90,000. It's a win-win situation. They discount the face value of that certificate that we issue, and the taxpayer gets a deal on it. So they're that because you're right, most of the production companies that are up here won't have a tax obligation. Mm-hmm. Their taxes are realized in California.
Okay. Representative Gardner?
So basically, it costs the state not dollar for dollar, because in reduced income from a corporate tax of somebody who's a corporate taxpayer, the $5 million spend here benefits the local community, individual payroll, what have you. So the state's kind of subsidizing the benefits to whatever community the film
is. Representative Gardner, through the chair. Yeah, that is how it's set up. That revenue will administer this in exactly the same way that they administer oil tax credits for exploration. We also offer commercial fisheries tax credits for equipment upgrades and stuff like that. You know, those are all industries that do pay taxes to the state. You know, this is a program that is developed, hopefully, to broaden Alaska's economy, but it is a net cost to the general fund.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions on the film program?
Maybe if you could finish up and then have a closing statement.
In finishing up, the ARDER program is also a component of the Office of Economic Development. It offers us an economic development outreach opportunity to the various regional
communities throughout the state. And again, they get to benefit from our industry expertise and identifying resources that could be developed out there. A Small Business Assistance Center, as I mentioned before, constantly growing, but certainly serves as a great resource for people that are interested in doing business in Alaska. We also administer the Made in Alaska program. We just got that logo legally trademarked, which gives us some legal teeth to enforce it. We've had a lot of pirating of that logo. It's certain. We just recently did a survey of the people that pay a fee to use that logo, and they definitely see the value. That Made in Alaska emblem is growing in value all the time. Product preference program. I'd love to talk to you more about that. That's a pretty big issue, but we don't have time here.
Joe, we're not going to shortchange your presentation. We'll just have to bring you back. But a couple of things that I think are important to the members of the committee is if you could work with Rob and Terry, is legislation of interest that's important to your department, let us know. And then some of your budget, observations would be helpful for us. But I'm going to ask you to come back at a future meeting.
Okay.
So we can fully flesh this out. Representative Sisno.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, one of the questions, and unless it was covered before I got here, I am very interested, concerned about what is happening with the costs of fuel that we've just gotten ourselves out of, but we're not out of that country yet. And on the business communities in rural Alaska, and how the ADA program and other programs like that, we can actually help. And it would be the department that would have the ideas to ensure that they have some kind of competitive or equalizing advantage, because the costs are so often so much higher in rural Alaska, and yet the products that come from rural Alaska is what we in urban Alaska live off of. And so I'd love to have that discussion sometime.
Yes, we'll have that at the
Great.
Next meeting. Joe, I really appreciate it and all the staff that came. But again, we're going to have you back in the hot seat at a very near future meeting.
Thank you very much for your time, and I will be available anytime you make time for me.
Thank you.
Okay. It wasn't so hot.
It was kind of fun, huh?
It was.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right. Thank you. Our next presenter, Ray Uyeda of ASME, and Ray, if you could come forward.
Who owns this machine?
You got your PowerPoint?
I do.
Let's close out that window there.
It was interesting.
It was very good.
Here?
Yeah, right up here. Go ahead and plug in your PowerPoint. Do you have it loaded?
It might be. I don't know.
Okay.
We gave it to
okay.
folks yesterday, so hopefully it's there. It's not there. Nope. This is loading up, Mr. Chairman.
Well, now we get to hear about a subject that's probably the least controversial in this state.
Fishing.
Got a long history.
let's see.
Okay, while it's loading up, as of course Ray has held this position since 2002 and is Coast Guard retired and is of course in charge of a very important aspect of our excuse me, of our state. So, Ray, please.
Co-Chairman Herron, Co-Chairman Munoz, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today about the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and the marketing arm that we do. For the record, my name is Ray Ryuta. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. I do have a PowerPoint presentation. I'll try to move through it fairly quickly, but it is a bit long. It's contained on the flash drives that we handed out, along with our annual report is also on the flash drives. We would have provided you the report, but if the ink is still drying at the printer, we should have those by Monday, when that's just one of those printing things that takes a little time to get. And with that, I'll go ahead and start. Please feel free to interrupt at any time if you have any questions. First off, just a quick description of who we are. ASME is a public-private partnership. If you read our statute, it looks very much like the Alaska Railroad statute. We are guided by a board of directors of seven people appointed by the governor. They basically have the oversight for everything that ASME does. I report to them. We're also affiliated with the Department of Commerce, which is why we're here with the Department of Commerce, and one of our ex officio members on our board is the Commissioner of Commerce. We are, by statute, the official seafood promotional arm for the state. Our mission is real simple. Our job is to increase the economic value of the Alaska seafood resource. This mission was redefined a few years ago when our new board came in. It used to be try to get people to eat Alaska seafood, basically. We can market everything we make, but the question is, can we market at a price that returns good value to the state and to our fishermen and our communities? So our board, when it was reconstituted about 5 years ago, directed us to focus on this mission, increasing the economic value. And just everything that we do is focused on that particular mission. And I think over the next few slides, I'll hopefully show you that we've been relatively successful in doing just that. This is basically our role. We want to make sure that we reposition our industry as a competitive and very market-driven organization or industry. And if you look at the products that have come out in the last 4 to 5 years from the seafood industry, value added in terms of fillet production, skinless, boneless, and canned smoked products, lots of things. And some are produced right here in Alaska, a lot more than were, say, 4 or 5 years ago. It's made quite a difference. That has been made possible through an infusion of money and tax incentives from the state and from the federal government that has improved the market position of the Alaska seafood industry dramatically over the last 4 to 5 years. In 2002, salmon in particular was in deep trouble. We're doing much, much better now, and I'll show you a few slides in a minute that explain that. I want to briefly just talk about ASME funding. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. We've got a presentation for the Finance Committee. But if you look at the chart behind you, you can see that we've had some real erratic funding from outside sources, mainly federal sources. And I'll just draw your attention to the several of the bars up there. The blue bar is federal funding. And you can see in 05, we got a huge slug of money from the Alaska Fisheries Marketing Board and the governor's revitalization strategy. We pushed that money out over several years so that we could have a multi-year marketing campaign rather than just go in and have a big campaign in 1 year and then, you know, with the variances, you never know what's going to happen with federal dollars. We pushed that out, and I think we did a pretty good job. The other thing the other two bars, the red bar is what the industry's provided. And as the value of the harvest has gone up and as the industry has voted to self-assess at a higher level than they did prior to reorganization of ASME, you can see that the industry contribution has steadily grown. In addition, because we've had some additional funds from the industry and more recently from the state, we've been able to attract federal market access dollars. The federal market access program is how we fund our overseas marketing, and it basically, for every dollar we put up, the feds put up two. So we're buying money from the feds to do our overseas marketing activity. So this just kind of shows you where the things have been. If you were to look at our budget line, it's kind of a flat line because we've managed to put some of this money out. Going into FY10, that presents a problem for us because a lot of those federal sources, with the exception of the market access money, which we still have, are basically gone. And those were dollars provided through Senator Stevens' office by way of earmarks to the AFMB and to the governor. So we're looking to hold in the budget our marketing efforts at about the same as last year, which are actually diminished from the year before. But we really don't think we should go down any further. So we're asking for some GF to offset a little of those dollars that have gone away. So let me turn quickly to the value of the state. And the numbers I'm going to present you now are from a recent report from Northern Economics that just came out. And this is what they say that the Alaska seafood industry is worth in direct and induced economic output to the state of Alaska. It breaks down into state revenues in this way, $84 million in tax revenue. Included in that are a number of self-assessments. ASME's money is in there, hatchery enhancement is in there, RSDA money is in that total thing, all these self-assessments. Direct revenue to the state that goes right into the Treasury to be dispersed as the legislature sees fit is there, and direct revenue that goes out to the boroughs and municipalities is in the $14 million range. This is just a quick breakdown of where that $55 million number comes from, and this is a quick breakdown of where the $14 million to boroughs and municipalities come from. It's important to understand that I think this particular sum of money is up to the borough and municipality's discretion on how they spend it. This does not have to be spent on any specific item or any specific purpose. They can use it for schools, they can use it for roads, they can use it for anything that they deem necessary. This is, again, from Northern Economics report, 54,000 people employed. According to their report, it's the number one employer in the state. In terms of people employed, and I believe a number three in overall economic value behind federal and oil and gas. I'm going to focus on salmon fishing for just a second because this is the largest sector, even though it's not the most valuable part of the industry in terms of sheer dollars. It's the largest sector that employs Alaskans, and here you can see the numbers that. Nearly three-quarters of the active salmon fishermen are Alaska residents. They're spread across Alaska, but they're not just restricted to rural communities. Anchorage and the Mat-Su have over 600 commercial fishermen that live in that area. The value of the ex-vessel value, this is the price that the fishermen get at the dock, breaks down like this, about $1.6 billion in 2007. As you can see, salmon makes up about a quarter. Pollock and Pacific cod make up about 37%. And this is by value. I don't have a volume slide up here, but if you had a volume slide, you'd see that close to three-quarters of the volume comes from the ground fishery. But it's not nearly worth, in terms of sheer value, what the salmon and the halibut and the shellfish are worth to the state. But this is what the fishermen get their basic money that's paid to the fishermen. That's what the taxes are based on. That's what that $84 million number I showed you earlier comes from.
Representative Sessna, do you have a question?
Yeah, a real fast one. I look at that, and it's very interesting. What would be fascinating is if you have that data available through the years, do you have it in a place where it's easy to get? Because it would be fun to see kind of the changes in the fisheries growth and reduction.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, yes, we do have that information right. Available, and be happy to make it available
Thank you.
To you and,
really
and the members of the committee.
Thank you.
Just as a, well, you'll see a gross number here in just a minute, but it's grown substantially in the last 4 to 5 years.
Okay, thank you.
These are things that we like to point to as accomplishments, and I'll segue just a second by saying the next few slides are good news because it's based on data that was gathered up until the latter part of this year. We've got some real challenges, like everybody else, with the economy going ahead. Holding the prices that we've managed to push our products up to is going to be a real challenge in the coming year. I think we all know that. But so it's a good news, but with caution, good news story here coming up. First wholesale value is a number that we like to point to because this is the value of the seafood when it leaves the state. $3.6 billion is what the numbers that we come up with. And this is after the harvest and the value added in-state before it goes to Seattle or wherever to be further processed or to be distributed. But this is what the first wholesale value of the Alaska catches is worth, is about $3.6 billion. And this shows the increase in price paid to fishermen. It kind of breaks down that $1.6 billion number since 2003. Again, as I mentioned, 2002 was really a terrible year for salmon, probably one of the low points. And since then, we've managed to grow. But as you can see, the ex-vessel value has gone up from $1.2 billion to $1.6 billion. And although we've had some very large harvests in there, the value has gone up greater than the increase in the harvest. So it's been a combination of an increased harvest providing more product to the market and also an increased value. So we've been able to capitalize on both of those. This puts first wholesale and ex-vessel alongside of each other for salmon alone. And What's instructive from this particular graph is that the higher the first wholesale value goes of a product, particularly salmon, the more the fishermen get to keep. There are fixed costs, of course, with any industry. Salmon is classic in that case here in Alaska. And as you can see in 2007, when the first wholesale was around $900 million for salmon, nearly 46% of that went to the fishermen themselves. So this is a good news. If we can keep the price up, then more and more money goes to the fishermen, increases the ex-vessel value, which also increases the tax return to the state. We are active in not only in the U.S. market, we're very active in the overseas market. The growth in overseas sales has been about 34% in value since 2003 to 2007. This is important because about just a little over half of Alaska's products actually go to the overseas market. We don't just sell in the U.S. We sell in Asia. We sell in Europe. And I'll talk about that in just a second here. We've been quite successful, I think, in making the Alaska brand well-known. It's taken a lot of time and effort. ASME's been in business for well over 25 years. It was established a long time ago as a public-private partnership to promote the Alaska brand. We are the brand manager for Alaska seafood, if you will, and we've managed to put the Alaska seafood on the menus of most of the restaurants in the states, and we're the number two most menued brand among the top restaurant chains in the U.S. We're right up there with Black Angus beef and Oreo cookies and things like that. So It's a very well-known and very meaningful brand, particularly in the States, but also overseas.
That's an interesting statement, is that we're in the top three, and so when you mean Alaska seafood, do you mean the, you know, salmon, scallops, whatever? What are the other we're comparing to? I mean, not by brand, but more like the protein.
We're certainly comparing to beef, pork, and chicken. A lot of the beef isn't really branded so much as Black Angus is, but we're also up against Haagen-Dazs ice cream, Oreo cookies, those types of things as popular branded items on the menu. We've done some recent surveys with restaurants. I've got a slide up here that shows you what we just did about positive impressions. And 77% of the people who see the Alaska Seafood brand at restaurants have a very positive impression on it. This is a program we did, I believe, with Hardee's, which is obviously a large restaurant chain, just to promote cod. For farmed versus wild salmon, we have our recent survey tells us that 84% of the people, if they see wild Alaska salmon on the menu, will pick it over farmed Atlantic salmon. So, you know, from 5 or 6 years ago, when on the menu it just said salmon with salmon, and everybody went, "What the heck is salmon? You know, I'll either order it or not." There is definitely a preference for wild Alaska salmon over farm salmon at the U.S. restaurants in particular. That's where we just did the survey.
Yes, and I guess before I go to Representative Gardner, you've described it very well as far as the U.S. market. Just before, you talked about the foreign markets. So is that they have their brands that are, of course, a different name, but the same kind of foods. Are we competing well in those foreign markets as well?
Chairman Herron, yes, we compete quite well. We compete as a state against countries, though. So we're up against the Norwegian Seafood Export Council, who has, you know, a $40 to $50 million budget and has less products to market than we do. We're up against the Chileans, we're up against the Spaniards, we're up against Canada, anybody who sells product overseas. So we compete well. I think our brand is very well respected, but it's a constant battle to keep our name out there.
Representative Gardner, then Representative Cisna.
Thank you. So if we were to break our own self-imposed rules about farming salmon, while the people involved in that might make some money, the rest of the salmon fishery would take a huge hit. We'd be sort of undercutting ourselves.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, it would certainly undercut our marketing message. Our entire marketing message is based on the idea that salmon from Alaska is wild and never farmed. If we change that, we would have to completely change our marketing program, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Sista, and then Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hate to say my own personal memories and understanding of the fishing industry go back to my years in Kodiak in the mid-70s, right? So I'm really time dated. But at the same time, there's some things that go beyond time and principles, and the fact that if you won a name in something there, and you've become popular, there's responsibilities that go with that. That advertising by itself doesn't keep you there. It might get you there momentarily, but it doesn't keep you there. And in the mid-70s, I actually was in Paris, France, at a seafood marketing show, and we went down to the marketplace, and the marketplaces are where you really see what happens and what's going on with the buyers. And there would be stands of Norwegian fish, and they would look like they were drawn. They were so beautifully cared for that there were pieces of art sitting there waiting for purchasing. And it was pretty competitive prices too. And then there would be the Alaskan salmon, and it would be dumped. It would be messy, ucky. And that's what we're not close enough to see that sometimes. And that was a long time ago, and we're here now. And wild has some things that would go with it. It wouldn't look like something was farmed. Not that farmed has some good value, because there's some real negative value with a lot of farm stuff. But what are we doing to help our fishermen maintain that value that we've now assured everyone that we're at?
Quite a few years ago, ASME started a quality program that provides tools, training, and information from the point of harvest all the way through to the point of sale. Mm-hmm. It's not just up to the fisherman. It's up to the fish tender. It's up to the processor. It's up to the shipper. It's wow. up to the salesman, all the way down to the salesman on the street. We have a wealth of materials that we've provided. We've also, and I'll skip ahead here, but I'll go ahead and talk about it. We also have developed something called the Seafood University, which is basically Seafood 101. And that started out from a training program that we did with Kroger's on the East Coast, and it got to be so burdensome we didn't have enough staff to go down and spend 3 weeks training everybody at Kroger's seafood counters. Kroger's is huge; they're the number two retail chain in the U.S. only behind Walmart. And so we said, how do we do this without having the staff become Kroger staff? So we did it. We put it online, and you can go to our website and see it. And take the course if you like, but it really is part of our training program for counter staff. We have a parallel one for wait staff and restaurants. We have HACCP training that we conduct with the university's MAP program to help make sure that all the products are handled carefully. And I think. Well, there's still certainly cases of that. Some people at the end of the you can't be everywhere all the time. I think our product is vastly improved in its presentation in the marketplace, and that includes overseas. Sometimes things get falsely labeled. You heard Mr. Osterman talk about made in Alaska. Well, there's probably more Alaska branded seafood out there than we've ever produced. But we try to get after that when we can. But I think the industry has taken on that responsibility very well, and we're very careful about that. It still happens, unfortunately, but it's not anywhere near as endemic as it once was. Our handling is much better, and we even conduct training with the Alaska Airlines on how to handle product going out of state. So we cover quite a bit of that, I think, and cover it quite well.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. The marketing of pink salmon has been a challenge at different times for the industry, and I'm wondering if you've explored the idea of marketing good quality Alaskan salmon that has low value to countries that have major consumption of seafood, like Asian countries, Indonesia, for instance, and some of those.
Co-Chair Munoz, There's two aspects or several aspects to that. First off, the industry for the last 3 to 4 years has moved pink salmon from traditionally 70-some-odd% stuffed into a can to about 50%, and about half of the pink salmon now goes out as fillets, frozen fillets. A lot of that goes into restaurants by some of our biggest companies use it. It goes into places like Long John Silver's, Jack in the Box, those kind of things. A lot of that goes into salmon burgers. Several of our companies make salmon burgers, which are very popular. So the industry itself has taken on changing the product form for pink salmon, which has raised the value. It's still it's not up there with sockeye or king, of course, but it's raised quite a bit. We also have a program with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's food aid program that we've looked into, and we've been working. We took that over from the state started it several years, four to five years ago. We took that over at ASME about two to three years ago, and what that does is that looks for opportunities in the U.S. food aid program to provide canned salmon, particularly some of our less saleable products like pale meated fish, which is a wonderful protein. It just isn't as attractive perhaps as some of the other pinks in the can. And we've done pilot programs in Asia, South America, and most recently in Africa, in conjunction with some of the AIDS research that's been going on to provide more protein into that market. We are the only meat product now in that market basket. We work with the Soybean Council and a number of other cooperators, as they're called, working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to try to find a market. And what that does is that allows what they call PVOs, private volunteer organizations, Catholic Relief Society, Samaritan's Purse, people like this, to come in and place orders with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They, in turn, go out to the industry for bids, and our companies provide as another market, literally, into that area. So the long answer to your question is, yes, we've explored that. We've found another avenue. But the industry itself has also taken on the role of trying to raise the value of pink salmon in particular through new value-added products.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Another thing that we've worked very hard on is a Cook It Frozen program. 4 or 5 years ago, frozen was kind of a bad word. You know, it had to be fresher. It wasn't good. I think legal seafood, just know if it's not fresh, it's not legal. All right. I think we've dispelled that myth through a very active program of teaching people about cooking salmon and other Alaska seafood products. From the frozen forum, we did some research. We've gone out and we've marketed this heavily. The extension of being able to cook it from frozen is it also can refresh from frozen and still be a wonderful product. We've done an awful lot of work with chefs, showing them exactly how good frozen product can be through the Culinary Institute of America, through a lot of other culinary schools. We even have a curriculum that we provide to a lot of culinary schools around America that they build right into their curriculum that shows them the benefits of Alaska seafood and how you can work from frozen into those markets. So it's really, this is, for my purposes, I think this is one of the best programs that we've put together in terms of changing attitudes toward products and allowing our frozen products to command a higher price. Most of the stuff that goes out of Alaska goes out in frozen form for obvious reasons. You just can't get it to market fresh from here. This is a quick shot of something we do overseas. I'll cover a few more overseas things in a minute. This is the Brussels Seafood Show, the largest seafood show in the world. And we talk about brand value. Just in Brussels, we compete literally against countries, as I said before. Our Alaska pavilion has the same footprint as the entire rest of the United States pavilion. So we stand alone there as an entity, as a state. Because we produce over half the seafood in the United States, so it only stands to reason. Most of our major companies are there, along with a lot of our smaller companies, and we have literally every size from Sissy Babbage right here in Juneau, who has a little organization called Northern Kita Caviar, to Trident Seafoods, which is the largest seafood company that operates in Alaska. It's just the full gamut. They're side by side in the booth, and it's a tremendous show, and you can see the results of the investment in that three-day show alone, which is why we go to shows periodically, is substantial. $31 million in on-site sales and $125 million in follow-on sales. So it's a very important show for us, and it's one that we really put a lot of time, money, and effort into. We use a lot of different tactics to try to get to our customers. These are some of them. We work a broad range of consumer campaigns. We do a lot of PR. We develop a tremendous amount of promotional materials. I didn't bring a big wad of those today. We have them on our website. They're available to the whole industry. That's one you're showing there, Representative Gardner, yes. And this is a sustainability brochure that we've developed, and I'll talk about sustainability in just a second here.
Great. I guess just to interrupt is, of course, we got the paper PowerPoint here and then here the brochure. I guess what have you found has been your most favorite ad that consumers and customers, people in the business have liked? I mean, there's lots of examples here, but what's the most favorite one?
The most popular ad we did that actually got the most feedback was an insert in a number of magazines, cooking magazines, Cooking Light, Gourmet, Bon Appetit. And it was a one-page insert that had little tear-off things. It was almost like an advent calendar. And as you opened it up, it had, we did two versions of this. One of them, it had different facts about Alaska seafood. That became incredibly popular with students, and we couldn't keep those in stock. They just went flying out the door. And we did a similar one that had chefs on it, where you open it up, and you know, each month you open, oh, here's Chef so-and-so, and here's Chef Al from Anchorage, or here's John Besh from New Orleans, or whomever. Those are actually, it turned out to be the most popular ads we did. We did do television with Ben Stein, which was hugely popular, but we didn't get nearly the positive feedback we did as we did on that one little one-page insert. It just goes to show you never know what's going to stick in the advertising business, but that was the most popular ad we ever did.
So on this one, on the tactics slide here where you have the salmon in a near vertical position coming out of the water, I mean, is that what people want to eat? Is a, you know, is a salmon like that comes out of this pristine area?
I mean,
do you hear that over and over?
Over and over again. Yeah, okay. Alaska, the wild Alaska salmon, wild Alaska image, Alaska as an image is huge in the marketplace. We've been able to leverage that very, very well. The same reasons that people want to come visit Alaska are the same reasons they want to eat seafood from Alaska. It's, you know, it's the pristine environment. It's clean water. It's a beautiful place. And in fact, you know, we had a presentation in Japan last year where we did a lot of sampling and we showed films of Alaska and Alaska seafood. And when we got done, we asked people to write down their impressions. And a lot of people said, oh, we love Alaska seafood. It's great. I'm going to eat it. But the overwhelming majority of the people all said, I want to go visit Alaska. So, you know, I'm going to send Ron Peck a bill for that one. But, but seriously, it's the same message. The reason people want to, you know, if they can't come to Alaska, at least they can taste a little bit of it. And we do play heavily on that in the marketplace, both domestic and overseas. These are just a few more of our partnerships. We work with just about every major retail chain, food service distributor, and restaurant chain in the country. I'm kind of working on the U.S. right now, but we do similar things overseas. These are the types of promotions we do. Another one, this is Jack in the Box, where we focused on Alaska pollock. Pollock has replaced cod in many places as the fish of choice because of availability and price. This past summer, we held a sustainability forum in Anchorage where we brought all of the Alaska's fisheries managers together to talk to our major customers. There's a real growing interest in the marketplace about sustainability and a certain amount of confusion out there as third-party certifiers have come in and begun to set down their own criteria as what is and what is not sustainable. We started to work last year to try to clear that up because we want to make sure that everybody understands that if it comes from Alaska, it comes from a sustainably managed resource. It's in our constitution. It's fundamental to the way we do business up here. And it's the kind of message that we send out to the world, literally, through forums like this. Unfortunately, a lot of NGOs have used sustainability to leverage their own little particular message. Greenpeace, for example, has just declared that all Alaska pollock should be taken off the shelves of every store in the United States because it's not sustainable by whatever criteria they use. We certainly don't believe that. And I think it does a disservice to the folks that manage the fisheries to imply that somehow they're managing it in any other way. We have a great story to tell, and we'll continue to tell the story to everyone. But it's a struggle because there's a lot of confusion out there that if it doesn't have this particular eco-label on it, somehow it's not sustainable. Some of our fish has MSC, eco-label, Marine Stewardship Council. Some of it doesn't. It really doesn't make any difference. It's all the same fish, comes from the same place, it's managed the same way. It's all from a sustainable
resource. Yeah, of course, we met here recently, and I appreciated how you explained that, and Rep's assistant has a follow-up question after this comment, is that, you know, it's amazing is how, you know, you can mention any organization that is trying to influence the let's just use the ASME and the salmon or the seafood product that we have here, is that it's just like in the turn of the century, is the guy would come around to the local merchant and says, you need protection, and you will pay me for that protection. And so, yes, I recognize, and that's a very, you know, you don't say it in your presentation, but it's a form of extortion that's really hurting us. And it's sending the wrong message about Alaska. And I appreciate you bringing that to the point about these people doing this form of extortion on us. So, Representative Sisson.
You're changing the subject of now what I wanted to say. Sorry. But I would say that just having been involved sort of in different layers of government all these years, and the constant drive to improve Alaska, having seen some of recently and in the past where we've dipped into places that we really didn't want to be, and it will happen, quality is something that's a hard standard to maintain. And when you have critics, the very best thing any one of us can do when we have critics is listen and look at it and make sure that they might not have something we ought to be hearing, because maintaining quality is tough, whether you be a legislator or a fish, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a hard thing, and it's good to not just say that those are terrible people. If they have a criticism, look at it. Make sure that they might not have something that we could learn from. And we all need to be there. That's just, I think if we're going to make sure that Alaska sells good outside, that we maintain that. And it's a hard one. It's a hard place to go. But on that note, just listening to the first part about all these different markets and then yours, there's in the tourism marketing, we have different niches, and there's the cultural historic niche. There really ought to be the gourmet fish tourism. Would be great to go to different places where there's great markets being created, and people could go learn how to actually cook. Wouldn't that be fun?
Representative Sisson, through the chair, actually, that exists.
It does. Oh, yay.
All in America, we've worked with them for the last 4 years, I believe, or more, working with some of their chefs. They actually have an onboard Iron Chef type of cooking demonstration that they do. And right here in Juneau, there's a company that's opened up that does celebrity chef type of cooking events. So you can get off the ship and go out and learn how to prepare and cook Alaska seafood. So that has taken on a niche very well. If I could just comment back on your earlier observation, yeah, absolutely, I agree. We take the criticisms, I think, across the industry. I absolutely agree. Quality is key to the marketplace. The problem with some of the NGO groups is their premise is you can't trust government, therefore you have to hire us to show you that they're doing their job. And that's what I find objectionable.
I guess, Ray, what I'd like to do is, there's only 10 minutes left, and so I want to basically let you have 10 minutes to conclude. But for the rest of the committee, I'd like you to get back with them on three basic questions, and I'll provide you the questions. Is that maybe they knew you and Joe were going to be here today, but the news has three topics related to this, and that is, you know, there's some CDQ groups that got some tax consequences coming up before them on unrelated businesses they gotten with the profits of fishing. And then the Yukon King Run looks like it's going to be in tough shape next year. And then the new Rural Affair Advisor for Governor Palin has a strong resume in fisheries. So I don't want you to answer those now, but if you could share those, your observations with all the committee members, I'd appreciate that. And with that, if you, we'll let you have the last 10 minutes to finish up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move through these slides here fairly quickly. There are, a lot of them are just examples of things we do, and then I'll try to wrap here in just a couple minutes. One of the things we work with a lot is celebrity chefs, and here you see a picture of Alton Brown, who's the current guy that we've been working with. If you go to our website, you'll see a wonderful little 6 to 7 minute vignette where he talks about Alaska seafood and sustainability. He has turned in to be a big fan of ours. He came up and visited Alaska last year, spent a week with us, went out on a fishing boat, did this film. We have every reason to believe that on some of his shows in the future on Food Network that he's going to be including Alaska seafood in there. When it comes to sustainability, he's one of the best spokesmen around, and we're delighted that he is in our camp, so to speak. These are just types of activities that we do. This is in Atlanta and in Cleveland, believe it or not. We actually celebrate good seafood in Cleveland. And this is doing cooking frozen demonstrations. And it's hard to see with the light in here, but you can see how many people are lined up to sample our products. It's huge. We really generate a lot of interest through these. We also work with the university system, University of Massachusetts. We spent time with them here about 4 or 5 months ago, where we actually had our food service director and our technical director do presentations to the students. We worked with their food service people. This is one of the largest campuses in the country in terms of the number of meals they serve every year at UMass. And so they had a whole Wild Alaska Week, and now it's a regular part of their menu. And we've reached out most recently to Stanford, and we have some other universities that we're working with. This is part of getting food service into the university system. I mentioned Alaska Seafood University. I won't dwell on that other than say it's on our website. If you want to see more about it, you can go click on that. We're hoping to develop a couple more modules down the line, but right now it's just basic Seafood 101 for wait staff. A lot of our own companies, when they get new people come to work for them, they may make them all go through Seafood U before they go to work on the trading desk. So it's been a real boon to folks. This is the national campaigns. The most popular one I talked about is the center blue thing at the very top that has a little fish on it. As you pull these little fish back, it has a little, it had a little piece of information about it, and that was just hugely popular. It was great. Those are some of the magazines that we advertise in. We had a national campaign that wrapped up in 2008 that had television, that had huge print, it had a lot of magazine articles. In order to fit into our 2009 budget, we moved off of that campaign, which was a $3 to $4 million domestic campaign, to about a $1 million public relations campaign. And there's a point of diminishing returns on advertising where you've got to start focusing on other aspects. Given what we had to work with last year, we moved into public relations. We've got some good numbers on that. We think it's going well. That's what our budget, which is for all intents and purposes a no-growth budget this year. It seeks to maintain that, but we think we're really at bare bones level with our budget to maintain our brand position. The rule of thumb that we use in advertising is that the longer you're out of the market, you lose 25% of your brand power each year. We have a very powerful brand. We really don't want to lose what we've spent decades and in particularly the last 4 to 5 years building up. International continues to be a big component. I'll talk just quickly about the international program. We have contract offices in Tokyo, Shanghai, London, Paris, and Barcelona, and we market actively in all of those overseas markets. They're huge markets for us. Japan continues to be our largest customer, but that has come down dramatically over the last 4 to 5 years. And Japan is not the only place that we market and import. Europe has grown. China is growing. We think there's tremendous potential there. It's still a reprocessing center for the most part, but we're seeing more and more products stay in China as the middle class comes up, and we learn they learn more about Alaska seafood. It's the largest seafood consuming country in the nation. It also produces more seafood than anybody in the world. But we think that has great potential. We do a lot of translations of materials. You can see some of our stuff here in different languages. This is a program in Japan where we're trying to get to the young kids and educate the next generation of seafood buyers. This guy is Mr. Fish up there on the left. He's absolutely hilarious. I wish we had the film because it's just crack you up to listen to everybody on him. But this was the one where they said after they got done, learned how to cook Alaska seafood and how much they love it, they said, but we really want to go visit Alaska. So. Media tours, we bring both domestic and foreign media. This was the result of a media tour we brought last year from Germany. This is part of a four-page spread in a German magazine highlighting Northern Kita caviar and other products here in the state. That just happened to be one that they picked out as a really good story. We take chefs overseas, particularly in China. You'll see Chef Al Levinson up there. We've had him in China, and Chef Naomi Everett from the University of Alaska. Has been part of our overseas effort to educate, primarily in China, where we're trying to educate their palate, if you will. We also work shows and trade shows. This is one in China. This is one in Russia that we just did. We've been to the Russian seafood show several years now. This is part of an emerging market. It's a huge roe market for us. Moved a lot of product into Russia. Economic times, not so sure if that's going to continue, but it's been really powerful for the last few years. Brussels Seafood Show, this is just gives you a glimpse of our pavilion. It's much larger than that. You're only looking at about a quarter of it, but it's very large, and we launched a sustainability platform there last year. Our messaging, as I mentioned before, also showcases Alaska and makes it a place that people want to come visit. Our threats and challenges, I'll just kind of wrap with that. We have built up a very powerful brand and a very enviable place in the market over the last 4 to 5 years, to the point where we're getting some of the highest prices totally that we've received in decades for our seafood. One of the biggest threats that faces us right now is the credit crunch, because a lot of the folks that want to buy Alaska products have to go out and get lines of credit to do it. It's the same thing that everybody that's trying to sell houses to factories, to just about anything out there in the marketplace. Hopefully that will resolve itself over time. There's not much we can do about that, but it's of tremendous concern to our industry. And that is probably the longest pole in the tent, quite frankly, as I'm listening to major processors, is trying to get good credit insurance and trying to be sure that they're selling their products to someone who's going to be able to pay the bill. That is resulting in some stagnation. It's resulting in price pressure, and we will try to work with the industry as much as possible to dampen that in the months and years ahead. But we're facing some certainly uncertain times and some very challenging times. I would suggest that backing off on marketing now is probably the last thing we want to do. We need to keep our name out there because we're about trying to maintain a price differential for our products. We can't compete as a commodity. We only produce about, even though we produce a lot of fish, we only produce about 2% of the world supply. We have to keep our name out there to encourage people to buy our wonderful products and pay a little bit more for them. So our biggest challenge is trying to maintain that in the threat of an economic slowdown, and it's going to be a tough couple of years ahead. I won't predict what it's going to be, but I know that it's going to be challenging. So with that, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chair, I appreciate the committee's indulgence and questions, and I'd be happy to answer anything that might come to mind after we adjourn here. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that any of you may have.
Ray, thank you very much. I mean, obviously, this is near and dear to all of our hearts. And Joe, you too. And we'll follow up with to continue your presentation at a future meeting. So with that, we're adjourned at 10 a.m. sharp.